Everyone, and welcome to Minute 101 of Season 7 of Movie Robin at the Daily Podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me for this special week of episodes over 100 is Jeanette Ward of the Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl. Welcome back to the show, Jeanette.
Hooray! So happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad that we were able to find some time to record this. I've been looking forward all season to because you were one of the first people to choose what week you wanted, and you specifically said you wanted this week. So, you know,
yes,
we'll see if that warrants it. We'll see what you have to say about the syrup. We'll have to wait. We'll have to figure it out.
Yes, absolutely. I should say off the top, like, I really like this movie. I am a fan of this movie. I think it's, I was gonna say one of the stronger entries in the trilogy, but there's only three movies, so that's not much of a compliment, but really enjoy it.
Okay. What do you remember your history with the movie? Do you remember when you saw it for the first time?
Oh, boy. When was this released? Did I see it in the theater?
It was released in the summer of 95. I think it was Memorial Day weekend in 95.
I must have seen it in the theater because I would have been a year out of high school. I maintain, and I think that it's been backed up by several reputable sources, that Die Hard itself, original flavor, is the best action movie ever made. I think it is flawless top to bottom. There are no wasted moments or energy. Everything pays off one way or another. I think the second one had its moments. It was certainly entertaining, but I think the third one was kind of a really illustrates the way trilogies at their best kind of work, where you have one that's really good, two that's weird and doesn't seem to fit, three that ties back to the first one and is okay, better than the second one. It feels like most trilogies kind of run that gambit. So yeah, I must have seen this in the theater. I liked it from the top. Sam Jackson is a welcome addition to anything, and Jeremy Irons, great. It's impossible to top what the perfectness of Hans Gruber and that performance, but I think that Jeremy Irons really took this opportunity and made it his own. So yeah, all of it's great, and I'm pretty sure I saw it in the theater. No exact memories of that, but.
Okay, that's fine also. But, you know, yes, I agree with everything that you just said right now, except for the fact that I can't really, you know, like for me, Die Hard 1 is number one between the three. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, it's harder to decide whether I like two or three better because I'm a big fan of two. And I don't know if it has to do with the fact of the way I saw it, you know, that I saw it, you know, twice in a row within, you know, within less than 24 hours in the theater. You know, I don't have an explanation as to why, you know, maybe I'm just, you know, I don't know. And I love the third one also. So it's like, I can't say whether I like the second or third better than the other, but for me, number one is number one. And then two and three, depending on, you know, the mood you catch me in, you know, whether I'll say which one of them I like better, you know, because I like elements of both these movies. As anyone who's listened to the 250 plus episodes that I've talked about those two, you know, so well, we're not at that point yet because, you know, people still have another month and a half to listen to this one, but you know, still, yeah, I have a lot to say about all three of the Die Hard movies, as well as other movies that I've already you know, done. So. You know, that's just the way these things go. What can I say?
For sure.
So minute 101 begins with John continuing to get tossed by Targo and ends with Cobb giving an order to Charlie. So, I mean, we ended things on Friday with John and Targo getting into a wrestling match. And
an all-out brawl.
Seriously. No, but the reason it looks like a wrestling match is because of the way that he swings him. You know, the way he's throwing him against the wall and stuff like that. I mean, this is a very different type of fight than what he had with Carl in the first one, and then what he had with Stuart in the second one. You know, so
it does parallel both of those nicely.
Correct, and even more so, this is more of a street fight than the others were. You know, with Carl, it was It was a nice fight between the two of them. With Stewart, it was a more professional type of fight from Stewart's perspective, because here you have this this naked Tai Chi guy fighting John on the wing of the plane. But here, this is just a no holds barred brawl, as you said. And right away John gets John gets up and is thrown against I guess a whole bunch of wooden beams that have chains on them. Now, I like the fact that they show these chains because it really brings back the fight between John and Carl. Where
Yes, it
you
does.
had
Yeah.
where you had that
Especially
that
with the
chain,
chains.
that's what I'm saying, with the chain hanging in the background, and you don't know, it's Chekhov's chains. You're not really sure if they're going to be part of what's going to happen or not. And in both of these
Oh no,
instances,
you're sure. You're
okay,
sure they're
fine.
gonna end up
Okay,
in It's
you're
the old trope of the slow, they catch them in the bag, you know they're gonna be my brother used to call it the landed here moment, where as soon as the camera zooms in on something in the background, then you know it's going to show up. And now, admittedly, there's no zoom in on these, but they're prevalent enough in the background, you know they're going to play in at some point.
Yes.
And what a payoff.
I like the way they do it. It's
Yes.
because one of the reasons I like it, and we'll talk about this over the course of this week, today, tomorrow, that they don't use the same ploy with the chain. If he would have done the
Yes.
exact same thing that they did beforehand, okay, but they take the same item and they change it a little bit as to what he's doing. He doesn't just like wrap it around his neck or anything like that.
Which I think is a good note for people who are making trilogies to consider. Like the what makes it good in terms of a callback or bringing up something you've seen before is using the similar element but in a way so that you it triggers the memory and the nostalgia of like, oh yeah, I remember that, but oh, that was new.
That's right.
That's what makes it entertaining. So that's all well done in this.
Yeah, for sure. No, I completely agree with you on that. I like it. It's use similar elements and then basically bring it to the point where you might think it's going to be the same thing and it's just not. So
Yes.
they do that well, especially at the bits John is a punching bag.
Yes, 100%. He certainly ends up, you would call him the loser in most of these fights. Like, he's not winning this.
That's right.
But for his,
Correct. Yeah, he finds ways to if it's he doesn't do a T he never does a TKO. Come on. I mean, even in the first Die Hard, we find out afterwards that he didn't kill Carl. He might have just knocked him out. But
Right, exactly. He's barely escaping these
that's
fights
right.
with his life. He's
That's
not
right.
winning.
But I think that's also one of the reasons why John McClane is such a great character because of that fact.
Yes.
This isn't a Schwarzenegger or a Stallone
Correct.
or a Van Damme or anything like that. This is someone who takes a beating and keeps going, which we'll get to a phrase similar to that shortly. But I just use the Timex quote, takes a licking but keeps on ticking.
Absolutely.
But we'll get to another one
But
very,
it's
very
also
shortly.
why John McClane 3, let's not talk about the others, it is so relatable and was such a change from the over the top giant 80s. Like this is a regular dude in a situation where he's just trying to do his best. More relatable, more entertaining, and why these movies are popular.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Especially the first three.
Only the first three.
Only the first three, right. And then after a few seconds, the lying on the ground. And we're back with all the kids running out of the school. It makes you wonder about the whole plot here, the ploy of getting the kids out of the school and stuff. That if the bomb was going to go off in the school, having all these kids run is going to actually help them. It's going to be a pretty big explosion, and it's going to take out more than the school.
Right, but they're getting as many of they can as far away from the school as possible. So yes.
Yeah. Again, it's,
The
and they
idea of
also
like
they
let's
know
get as
the
many people
size
as
of
far away as
this
possible.
theoretical
Yes, I
bomb.
agree.
It's not, they know what type of damage this is going to do.
Right, yeah. Not small.
For sure.
Oh, they're doing the
Right. It's
best
not
they
like you could
can.
have a bus there and have
It
everyone,
was
okay, get on the bus
too
and we're going to
tough,
drive out of
sorry.
here as quickly as possible. You know, obviously that's not going to work either. You just have to have them run as far away as possible. I mean,
Right.
we don't ever see where they congregate these kids. We just see the kids just run. You know, that's it. Just run in all any direction.
We see the cops kind of have like reached a couple blocks away, stop and turn back and watch. But where are they staging all these kids? You know what? I'm going to trust that they have an evacuation plan and that they have them in a meeting spot, safe meeting spot. My condo association just had a fire prevention meeting and they stressed to us that we need to have meeting spots. If you have to evacuate, you got to have a meeting spot. So let's assume that these kids have all gone to their
Okay, but
prearranged
again, that
meeting
having
spot.
that meeting that you just had was in 2024, and this is 29 years ago, where the world thought that things were safer. Let's put it that way. You know, this is before
True.
9/11. This is
True.
before people started realizing that there are global threats out there.
Boy, that is, yeah, to put it in that context, yeah, a pre-9/11 movie like this. Boy, I guess I hadn't thought about that aspect. That does make it like maybe they don't have a meeting spot. Maybe they simply release those children to the
It could be,
wilds
could
of the
be.
city.
You know, it makes me think of one of your favorite movies. You know, makes me think of one of
Free-range
your favorite
school
movies,
children.
Passenger 57. You know, it's like that movie is so different when you think
That's
about it in
right.
post 9/11.
Yes.
That's
Yes.
right.
Where it just
That's
wouldn't
right.
happen.
So basically, all these kids are running, and we have cops that are directing them. And you see one of the cops, and he's got this really funny look on his face. If you, I don't know if you have the clip up or not, but at second six,
I do, which
you see,
oh
there's only
man.
one of them that's looking at the camera or looking towards the camera. It's the, no,
The
the
one in the
black guy in the
back?
front at second six. There's a kid with a green shirt that runs past him. And he just has this really strange look on his face.
Well, he's
Like,
probably
he's an
shocked by
actor.
the
He's
situation.
I don't think he's yeah.
He was unprepared. No one warned him that there'd
That's
be
right.
scores of children running past him.
No,
He was
nobody told me that that's what I was gonna
shocked
have
by the
to
situation.
do.
Hey, sometimes when you're a background actor, you don't know
That's
what you're
true also.
reacting to until it
But
happens.
from stories I've heard, that is very true. Have you ever been a background actor?
I have not, no.
Oh, okay. No,
My
I thought you were.
my brother
You
has, and
sounded
so
as if you were
stories from
talking
him, yeah.
from experience.
Yes, stories my brother tells me. Oh, sometimes you show up and you got to do what you can, but no one has really told you what's happening, and you just have to go with the flow.
Okay.
Because even if they've told you something, it might change shortly.
Okay. Is your brother a he does acting, you know, or just
Yeah.
something he does on the side?
No, he's out in LA. That's what he does. He said, yeah, for a while he got very good at just popping his head out at the right moment where you could catch him in some things.
Okay, hey, why not?
So there's a list. I'll have to send you. I have some like screenshots I can send you. It's kind of entertaining. He got very good at that for a while. He was on a lot of episodes of Ace and American Housewife. He was a regular one of the workers in the cafe that would visit regularly. It's the same thing as most things in Hollywood, where once you get in with a set crew, you end up on the same productions regularly. So it's that type of effect. But yes, a lot of like showing up, being told general direction is the background, but then because you're at lowest on the distribution pole of responsibility, occasionally your direction changes repeatedly and often, and you get yelled at for things that are not your fault. You know that old, so this poor guy in Die Hard 3 was probably showing up to work and they were like, you're gonna be a cop, stand here. And suddenly there's a mass of children running at him. He handled that very well. I'm gonna pay him his compliments.
Yes, that's true. That's true, especially as the is rolling downhill. Yes. Okay, makes sense. Makes sense. So you're in other words, you're saying your brother is the Gunther from Friends
You're talking to
of all
someone who's
these other
never watched
shows.
Friends, so I will
Okay,
say
Gunther is a background character in a cafe that eventually became more of a character.
yeah, there you go.
You know, because he was there all the time.
Sure.
So like, you know, they people started creating a backstory and stuff like that, and they eventually brought him into a few episodes with a few lines here and there.
That's pretty
But in
awesome.
general, he's still just the background guy.
Yeah, I
You know,
liked
that's
it.
about it. Yeah. Okay. And as all these kids are running, we hear we're back in the classroom with the four kids. Now, did you recognize any of these kids?
Yes, and the Hodge brothers, which was, of course, my other
That's
big
right.
thing with this. Aldous and Edwin, who both have fantastic careers in their own right, but Aldous has been really impressive, starting with like Leverage. If you haven't watched Leverage, I really enjoyed.
What do you mean? His career started in Die Hard with a
Well, of
Vengeance.
course, but big things that he's been in since. I really enjoy the series.
Big things. There you go. Once again.
He is honestly, Aldous is the one who I thought. I feel like Chadwick Boseman's passing was difficult to handle by the MCU, and I love what they did. I think they handled it correctly. But if they were going to recast T'Challa, I feel like Aldous Hodge would be a good choice. I he
Yeah,
was
but he's also Hawkman, so
he,
I don't know.
yes, but that's not going anywhere, and he deserves better than that. Because
Okay.
he was really excited about that role, and that movie was. It was a movie, but I really think that in the MCU he could be treated a little bit better and given space to build the role as he saw fit. So I'm sure, listen, he's doing what he does. He's got a lot of stuff happening. Great, maybe underrated actor. And Edwin is, he does more of like this TV show, that TV show, that. But they're both great. They're super entertaining, and it's so fun to see them as children together in this movie.
That's right. That's right. And they're all four of these kids are there. Then we hear one of them screaming, "What are you doing? Yo, where are you going?"
And thank God
And then
they
the other one
do.
goes, "Hey, where are you going? What's going on?"
Thank God they're
So
screaming because otherwise people wouldn't have known they were up there. So thank goodness.
that's right. Right. It makes you wonder why they got curious as to what's going on. If the windows are closed and everything like that, would they have heard all the kids shouting or whatever it is?
Yeah. Well,
You know,
they would have
through the
noticed
windows.
something was happening.
Right. Well, maybe actually, is the window open or is it closed? You can't even tell.
You can't tell.
No, the window is open. The window is open. That's why. So okay, so they probably do hear the they probably heard all the kids screaming
I heard
and
the
then went
commotion.
to the window and heard the commotion exactly and said, "Oh, well, wait a second. Why are all these kids going?" And they're like, "Where are they going? What are they doing?" And then they start screaming, and we get a great shot of all the kids from above running out.
Yes.
Now, I wasn't able to figure out what this is. What game is painted on the ground in the playground? Do you have any idea? Because it's not
Let's take a
hopscotch.
look
I was
here.
thinking it was hopscotch. At 14 seconds, you can see
Huh. Boy, that is.
it.
I don't know what that is. That's a really interesting looking board. It's not four square because that would be bigger. It's not hopscotch, like you said, because that would be in a line. It must be some game I'm not familiar with.
Yeah.
Unique to New York City. You need someone from New York City who will have an opinion on what that
Okay, that sounds fair.
is.
So, I mean, even though it's not hopscotch, I decided I was going to look up a little bit of history about hopscotch. So,
Okay.
do you know anything about hopscotch?
I will venture an opinion that, boy, it seems real old. Very, very old.
Okay, define very, very old.
1800s.
No, goes back much further than that.
Really? Oh, I'm shocked by that information.
Yes. So it's based on an earlier game. That's part of the thing. But the idea is they say that it was played in between 1200 and 500 BCE in India.
Wow.
Yeah. And it
Okay.
was a game that
That
was
is
actually pr prohibited
fascinating.
by Buddha.
Who, why?
I can't figure out why. It doesn't say. It just says
That is.
that but if you're talking about in the English language world, English speaking world, so that it dates to the late 17th century. So there you were correct with by
Well,
saying
my
the
guess is
1800s.
it certainly spread due to colonialism, as most
Yes.
things do. So
Correct.
it was collected and brought back along with multiple other things
That's
due to
right.
colonialism. But yeah, that's really interesting. Is there, everyone has a vague like, oh yeah, hopscotch. There's probably this is one. Is it one of those things?
Yeah, of course. Of course. So there is a book that came out in 1672 by Francis Willoughby, and it's known as the Book of Games, and it has a game in there called Scotch Hopper.
Okay, all right. I like that better.
Okay. Yeah, and you have a piece of tile or a piece of lead that's on a boarded floor.
Sure.
And then it's divided into different figures that make it into different types of boards and stuff like that. And it was actually a game where schoolboys played.
Uh-huh, yeah.
You know, I mean, not to sound, sexist or anything, but to me, hopscotch always seemed like a game that girls played.
That's interesting, yeah.
You know, so I don't know. Huh. I mean, there's a quote from the Poor Robin's Almanac from 1707 that says, lawyers and physicians have little to do this month, so they may play at Scotch Hoppers.
Sure, yes. So, yes, little to do, so why not head out and play some Scotch Hoppers?
That's
I like
right.
it.
No, hey. Yeah, seriously. yeah, it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
The idea of Scotch. Scotch is similar to a line or a scratch.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
That's the whole idea that you know you're jumping or you're hopping between
the marks.
You know, different lines exactly. So yeah, no, I just thought that
that's
was
very
interesting.
Yeah, what we see in this minute is for those who don't have it in front of them, it's a large square with other squares in it. Each square has a number. The squares are kind of in the corners and on the sides. And then there's a square in the center that seems to be broken up into other numbers, which is why...
Into X's. No, they're
yeah,
X's.
Yeah, at first I was like four square, but no, because that's usually much larger. So
It looks to me like Sudoku or something.
Yeah,
like
almost like that. Yeah, it's a grid.
It's an early
sort of grid-based number thing.
Because also, if you look at the two different grids that they have, the numbers are different in our different places.
Well, maybe it is. Early form of Sudoku. And by early, I mean just within the... I'm sure Sudoku is another thing that has existed for thousands of years.
Right. That's true. So if anyone knows what game that is, please let us know. You know, there can be people that are willing to say, oh, I played that game when I was a kid.
Yes.
But I didn't.
No, I don't recognize it. I'm very curious. I hope someone lets us know.
Yeah. And then the shot goes back to Targo.
Yeah.
And, you know, as with any good villain in an 80s, 90s movie, you know, he, instead of doing what he's supposed to do, he decides to talk.
Yep.
All right.
A little mid-fight monologuing.
That's right. I see you all day, little man, policeman, and you don't go away.
That's right. Which basically that sums up John McClane's entire character right there.
It's funny that he says that. My problem is that where did Targo see him all day? Targo never came into contact with John.
Targo was kind of always like either underground or inside. He wasn't ever like seeing. You know, but
that's right. The closest he comes to John is when he puts, you know, the bomb in the, you know, in the tunnel. That's
sure,
it.
Sure, yeah.
And he's not even close to John.
Yeah, probably via radio. Listen, English is not Targo's first language, so he probably meant I heard about you all day.
It could be. It could be.
I'm going to give him that excuse.
And that's right. And I love John's response. He goes, yeah, I'm that Energizing Bunny.
Yeah, that's right.
But now I'm going to ask you, Jeanette, what do you know about the Energizer Bunny?
You know what? What a good question. I feel like the Energizer Bunny, I'm sure at some point, was new to me.
I've been waiting for months to talk about this.
But I also feel like it just feels like he's existed forever. But I'm sure at some point it was new. I feel like it's a thing from my childhood, but also could have predated my childhood.
It's from your childhood. It is from your childhood.
Okay. What a perfect commercial mascot in that it's a reference you could now make and everyone knows exactly what it means. Like the marketing genius who came to Energizer Bunny was spot on. It's exactly what it needs to be. Clearly illustrates the longevity of an Energizer battery to this date. People think Energizer are better than other batteries just because of that bunny. Simple, clean, clear, the same now as he was when he was first debuted. Yes, great product.
Okay, so the Energizer Bunny is the mascot of the Energizer Battery Company from North America. It is a pink mechanical toy rabbit with an Energizer battery on its left knee, and it wears sunglasses and has flip-flops and has a bass drum that bears the Energizer logo.
That's right.
Now, it's really cool the story of how this came about. It debuted in 1988.
Okay.
Okay, so it is part of your childhood, just as
Yes.
it's like part of mine. But it was created as a parody of the Duracell bunny.
There
Okay, now
was a
apparently
Duracell bunny?
Duracell had a TV ad from 1973, and they had its drumming bunny. Okay, and they trademarked the bunny, but their trademark lapsed in 1988. And when that
Oh.
happened, Energizer then decided they were going to create their own trademark, and they would show that their bunny is, their battery is more powerful than theirs.
You know what? That is fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. I had no idea there was a
That's
Duracell,
right.
but of course, from the 70s, yeah, I'm not going to remember that as clearly, but wow. So someone in Energizer was just sitting on this idea, counting down the days. So that trademark expired and was like, wait till we launch this.
That's right.
Love it.
That's right. And here you have him moving, as opposed to just being a bunny that's drumming. So he's eventually in the commercials, he eventually leaves the studio and stuff like that. In the apparently the Duracell bunny only stayed in the studio because that's all he could do.
Okay, yeah.
He wasn't moving.
Fair.
That type of thing. So it's just very cool the
Yeah.
way that they do that.
Shocking. Those flip-flops, man. He gets around.
Yes, and basically, he would they would have this character show up in supposed commercials from Duracell, showing that he's outlasting the thing.
Yes.
And then they created all these fictional products that they would have like a product, they would have like a commercial, and then the commercial would stop, and then the Energizer Bunny would move across it.
Still
So
going.
you have the Cytogen hemorrhoid remedy. The Nasotone sinus relief, the Trescafe coffee, the Alarm deodorant soap, the Chugga Cherry cola,
I
and
that's what I remember the most is watching, because you never knew when you were watching a commercial where you're like, is this real or is this a fake one that the Energizer Bunny is about to come through?
that's right. And they would have even some fake commercials with celebrities. You had Lyle Alzado, who was promoting a snack called Pigskins, and you had Ted Nugent. Doing an ad for Mexican food chain called Cucaracha.
Wow.
Yeah, so see, that's just really cool that they.
Unbelievable.
It's from what I understand, it's still going.
Yeah. There was a new one on the other day, and we're rolling into Halloween season here, so there's that one where he kind of sneaks up on somebody and they're all frightened, and
Okay,
then it's just
makes
him, and
sense.
it reminds you to, for that reason, your
In
Halloween
popular
decor.
culture, there are candidates that refer to themselves as the Energizer Bunny. You had George H.W. Bush, the father, in 1992, referred to himself as the Energizer Bunny, and Howard Dean in 2004 before he screamed himself out of politics. They actually had a screensaver for Windows 3.11 that featured a Energizer Bunny from 1992. I remember those. And Energizer was a sponsor for Star Tours at Disneyland. And the bunny would appear in several ride
Oh,
theme
interesting.
advertisements when you were leaving the show. Stuff like that.
Huh.
The
Very
Energizer Bunny
cool.
was in the Macy's Thanksgiving 2006.
That I feel like I
That's
know.
right. From 2006 to 2011. Had a Energizer Bunny Beanie Baby that debuted in at Walgreens in 2007. And the poem that on the tag would read, "Whether at home, at work, or play, nothing will get in EB's way. And here's me, just keeps going and going."
That's very good.
So yeah, and they've had a few lawsuits, obviously, which makes sense.
Sure, yeah.
You know, nothing ever happened to them. That even Duracell tried suing them, and that didn't work
Yeah, well, because their,
either.
trademark expired. It's just, it's there are very few ad campaigns that are so well done that they, number one, last that long, number two, become culture reference in and of it itself. Like at this point, you can say Energizer Bunny in reference to something, people know exactly what it means.
Right. Exactly. Especially now, is it to Targo? And I never caught this before doing my research here, because like John says that kicks him in the face first. He says you don't go away, and
Yes.
then Targo kicks him, and then he says you don't go away, and then John, as he's on the ground, just starts laughing and goes, "I'm the Energizer Bunny," and Targo at that point says to him, he's waiting, and then John takes a piece of scrap iron or something like that and stabs him in the
Yes.
leg.
Something that's gonna make sure he needs a tetanus shot afterwards.
Yeah, probably. And I love the way that Targo just laughs it off. And
He
he
just looks down,
that's
just
right.
like, oh, you have stabbed me.
He's like, "Oh, I just felt a little prick. That would be it." What was that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. I unconcerned about this situation
Yeah. And
in
then
which you have shoved this rusty piece of metal into my thigh.
that's right. And John starts running away and then trips and falls down. And then Targo
He
goes,
can't even run
"Where?"
away
That's
smoothly.
right. "Where are you going now, huh? Going to arrest me, Bunny?" I never understood that he calls him
Yeah,
Bunny.
yeah. Uses the bunny reference immediately. Very clever.
Yeah. You think Targo knows what the bunny is? Probably not.
Sure. Targo is well up on pop culture. I bet you'd be surprised.
Okay, that's
He
fair.
certainly looks like a dude who relaxes at night in front of the TV watching whatever's popular, listens to a lot of, Billboard Top 100 hits on the radio. Absolutely.
Okay, that's fair. And then John does something very sneaky. As he's trying to get up, he seems to fall on part of, the end of a chain, and then he says, "I don't think I'm gonna arrest you. I'm gonna f you." And then he like grabs the chain and sweeps the feet, and
Yes, sweeps
Targo falls down.
both
He
feet.
does the Karate Kid move of sweeping the feet,
Sweep the
sweep the
feet.
leg, sweep the
And
leg.
this, again, where John is clearly losing this battle, but using physics to just, well, this man is clearly taller, more powerful, a better fighter. I need to get him off his feet so that I have some sort of, oh yeah, I can use these chains.
That's right.
Or maybe he didn't even think that far ahead. Maybe he just got lucky. Either way, it's very effective.
And then we're back in the school. I love the way they move back and forth between them. We see Lambert just jogging
Yes.
along, and stands behind the truck where Cobb is standing, which again is right across the street from the school. If the school blows up, that truck is not going to be saving any of them. If anything, that truck is going to crush all of them. That's what I would think from that type of explosion. And then Lambert says, "I knew it was bull. There's nobody watching."
It is such a good trope. Are often seen as negative, but I think in certain aspects they can be really beneficial if used correctly. And I think in an action movie, especially, to have, if you have more than one lead, or if you have kind of an ensemble feature, or multiple stages of action, like in this case, it's so good to have the action happening on multiple fronts and cutting in between them. I think it really builds tension for the audience and really keeps everybody engaged in what's happening.
Correct.
It's, I always think about, I think Return of the Jedi, I'm sure it was done better and bigger before and or after, but when you think about the
The three
act
battles,
three of
yeah,
Return of the
for
Jedi,
sure.
where three battles happening simultaneously where you are equally engaged by each one, and just as one escalates to a point, you flip to the next one, and it keeps you on the edge of your seat, keeps you engaged. And they're kind of doing that same thing here, where John's scene is one and the scene with the kids is two and the scene with Charlie is three, and I think all of
That's right.
those one final act to this movie.
Correct, especially when you listen to the way they do the music here also.
Yes.
The music builds it up also a
That's yeah,
lot.
that's in my notes for later. Yes.
That's right.
Boy,
And
the score of this movie is so well done. Again, the scores,
yes.
you should never notice them. If you ever notice the score, it's done really, really badly or really, really well. And in this case, I think it's done really well because it absolutely enhances the scene.
Yeah, Jay has told me that he hates scores and he hates when and he never pays attention to scores. But as you just said, you only hear the score if it's really bad, if it's amazing,
Yes.
And I think this fits into the latter. That's
Agreed.
my opinion there.
Absolutely.
And Cobb says, "Time to get Charlie out."
Yes.
And then he talks into his microphone or his headphones and says, "Let's move, Charles. Time's up." And we see Charlie working. He's working really hard. We'll
Well,
talk
yeah.
tomorrow about what he's really doing and why he's really doing it, but whatever. That's a separate issue.
I'm sure by this point, Graham Greene is great.
Well, we'll get to more great Graham Greene later this week,
Yes.
with some interesting feats that he accomplishes. This minute. Do you have anything else you want to say about this minute, Jeanette?
Let me check my notes. John, this is what I have written down. John getting his ass kicked and being a smart ass.
There you go. Makes sense. That's a very nice way to concisely say what happened in this episode.
What's happening?
That's right. So once again, we have absolutely nothing to say about the script because this part is not in the script. This is all part of the new ending that is not connected to the boring one that they have in the script. And
Thank
that's right.
goodness.
So every Monday we have a segment called John McTiernan Monday, where my guests will give their top five John McTiernan directed films. Jeanette, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up? I mean, you only have 11 to go through, so it shouldn't have been
I,
that
yeah, and I
difficult to
appreciate that.
figure out.
Yeah, no. I'm the person who, when I go out to dinner, I appreciate a restaurant that has a menu on one page. The fewer options. Number one, it means that what you've done really well. And number two, it just makes my choice easier. So I appreciate that.
Okay.
In this particular case, John McTiernan, like the stuff that he's done, the majority of those 11 movies I've enjoyed. Number five, I have kind of a tie between 13th Warrior and Last Action Hero. 13th
Well,
Warrior,
you got
now
to
I
choose
read
one of
in
them.
Eaters of the Yeah, well,
Oh, okay.
let me get there. I read Eaters of the Dead when I was going through all of Michael Crichton's books, and it is written firsthand, so it's a kind of a tough read. Some of the books were you there's very like if you read Michael Crichton books from number one all the way through chronologically, you can see the point at which he realizes, oh, all these are being made into movies. Let me change the way I write. This one is kind of before that point, and it's kind of a slog, but the movie is really interesting, and I think it was a good use of Antonio Banderas at the time. Although playing, well, we can get into cultural appropriation or appreciation at a different time. It's interesting either way. Last Action Hero, I found to be very entertaining. It was much maligned, much maligned. People hated that movie. I appreciated it because it kind of let Arnold. He is smarter than people give him credit for, and I really liked him playing into his stereotype and turning that on its head. I liked the little flips and switches in the movie. I liked the tongue-in-cheek moments. I thought it was charming and fun. So, yeah, I might put that as number five and bump 13th Warrior down to number six. So there you go, Last Action Hero, number five.
Okay.
Number four, I have The Hunt for the Red October. There are so many quotable moments in that movie. I think it's probably one of the best uses of Alec Baldwin, right next to maybe original Beetlejuice and Married to the Mob. It's just really well done. Great use of Tim Curry. Great use of Sam Neill. Like, yeah, top to bottom. Very good movie. So, yeah, Hunt for the Red October. Number three, Thomas Crown Affair. What an adult movie. So well done. Elegant, slick. Pierce Brosnan at his best. Rene Russo just really chewing it up. I like that. Now, it is a remake, but I like it better than the original. The pieces of the original that I had seen. Number two, and one are kind of tough, and this might be one of those that flips back and forth depending on the day and what you're in the mood for. Number two, I'm going to say Predator. Boy, that movie is nearly flawless. It's just so well done. It's excellent. The overarching themes, the way you take all the stereotypes, you throw them in the jungle, you turn it on its head, you have a creature who's there just for hunting's sake, which is such a commentary that really needs to be the people who need the message aren't bright enough to catch the message. I just really like that movie. And the Predator design, whoo, just so good. Everything about that. Love it. And then number one, Die Hard. Again, the best action movie ever made, period. So, yeah, number one.
All right. That is a great list. Thank you very much for that. So, Jen, yep. Why don't you tell people where they can find Jeanette Ward?
Yes, my movie reviews are at The Mundane Adventures of a Fangirl at wardadventures.blogspot.com. Admittedly, it's slightly out of date. Hey, life has been lifing. I just haven't had a chance to do it. So that's where you can find that. But you can also find me on all the socials. I'm out and around. You can catch news on my belly dance troupe, see what we're up to. You can find us there at tamarindtribalbellydance.com. And then, yeah, I'm out here doing stuff, trying to be out here, surviving in these streets.
Okay, fair enough. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
When Johnny comes marching home again, hoorah, hoorah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hoorah, hoorah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.